The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
It's the economy, stupid. That old saying hitting President Biden's approval rating hard, sinking to a new low of 38%. That is according to CNBC's latest All-America Economic Survey.
Clearly, the American public's in a foul mood. They're in a foul mood about the economy. They're in a foul mood about the president and his policies. It doesn't look like very much is going right for President Biden. This 38% is the lowest of his presidency. This is the fourth track that we've done this since the beginning of his presidency. And the disapproval rate, he's underwater substantially more than he was last time.
You know, from gas to groceries, nearly everything in our lives is getting more expensive. And the same goes for the housing market.
As demand continues to exceed supply, median home prices hitting a record $405,000 in March, a more than 13% increase from March 2021. Meanwhile, rents have increased 17.1% from this time last year.
We'll now charge sellers a 5% fuel and inflation surcharge. The new fee set to start April 28th. The company's response to the highest inflation rate in this country in 40 years.
Amazon says this is the first time that they've done this in the company's 27-year history. They had hoped not to. They expected that inflation would sort of get back towards normal this year, but obviously that has not been the case. But all too often, the high cost of living is eating into people's paychecks. Now, these investments that he's going to be talking about as far as supply chain, infrastructure, that should help. But that's going to take some time. And, Jim, people are running out of patience.
Some highlights from the propaganda press over the last 2 days. They have turned on Joe Biden, NBC. It doesn't look like very much is going right for Biden. ABC talking about the 17% price hike in rents. CNN. People are running out of patience. This is the media that has tried to hold up and carry water for this administration, and they could barely make it 1 year. You'll remember the Biden boom last November, where they all came out with these crazy reports about how great the economy was doing, how wonderful Joe Biden was, and you could tell it was all so scripted and staged because they were all saying the same thing at the same time. And here they are now, all saying the same thing at the same time, bashing Joe Biden. They're frustrated. Jen Psaki is frustrated. Kamala Harris has gaffe after gaffe. There are rumors that Joe Biden is getting lost in the White House and needs help getting to his room in the Oval Office. And lo and behold, you're seeing more of Barack Obama as this administration, the puppet administration, continues to collapse. Well, welcome back to the Trumpet Daily. I'm Sam Livingston, your guest host for today's show. Mr. Fleury, I believe, is in the Northwest today. He will be back on the show on Monday. If you have any feedback, you can send that to td@thetrumpet.com. You can watch the live video stream weekdays, 11 a.m. at thetrumpet.com/live. At our website, you can download the podcast and listen to any previous episodes. Quite a few news items for today's show. We'll follow up on a few stories that we covered earlier this week. Some more on the New York City subway shooter, Biden's free-falling poll numbers, the implosion at CNN, and some more COVID news. That poll, or that soundbite we played to open the show, talked about how horrible the polling was for Joe Biden. A Quinnipiac poll has his approval rating at 33%. That's the lowest he's had for that survey. Among independents, that approval rate is at 26%. So that's the group that politicians want to hit the hardest, those independents. That's generally how the president is determined, unless you cheat in the election, of course. So among independents, his approval rating is at 26%. In that poll. This is an article from The Hill. It's titled, Democrats Face Nightmare Scenario, a Biblical Disaster. Democrats are facing a nightmare scenario with about 6 months to go before the midterm elections. Inflation, immigration, the war in Ukraine, and the still lingering COVID-19 pandemic make for a dreadful political atmosphere for President Biden's party. The problems are compounded by Biden's weak approval numbers and the historical pattern whereby President's party typically loses seats in the first midterms of his tenure. "I think this is going to be a biblical disaster," said one Democrat strategist who did not wish to be named. "This is the reality we are in as Democrats, and no one wants to face it." And I was going to include this next clip in the montage, but it was just it was too juicy. It needed to be by itself. This is CNN talking about Biden's horrible poll numbers, and notice how many polls they reference here. And then notice at the end who they compare it to. This is clip two.
There is brand new polling out on the presidential approval rating, and it's not good for President Biden.
"I don't like just looking at one poll. I like looking at multiple polls. And there were four different polls released this week. Quinnipiac, we had a Hart Public Opinion Strategies poll. That's with NBC or CNBC, Ipsos Reuters, CBS News, YouGov. I want you to look. These numbers kind of differ. They range from the low 30s to the low 40s. Low 40s is not good either. But what's key is the lowest are tied for the low for the pollster. Lowest here. Lowest here. This is 1 point off the lowest. Lowest here. And when you have three or four pollsters showing the lowest numbers for the president of the United States, that is indicative of a president who's in a lot of trouble, at least to where he has standed historically."
Well, let's talk about history here. How does Joe Biden, President Biden, compare to former President Trump in this stage of the presidency?
You know, there was always that thing, oh, Donald Trump has the lowest approval rating at this point in his presidency. We did it over and over and over and over again. Well, at this point in his presidency, Donald Trump's numbers, actually his average approval rating, is 1 point higher than Joe Biden's, which is at 41%, Donald Trump at 42%. A first-term president at this point in his presidency, this is the lowest. This is the lowest for anyone who was elected to the presidency and didn't get up there through the vice presidency. This is a really, really, really bad number.
What is going on? CNN admitting that Donald Trump is more popular than Joe Biden. And like he said there, they're the ones that were pushing that for 4 years about how horrible and unpopular Donald Trump was. He had to fight against the media. He had all of these made-up scandals against him. Russia, Russia, Russia. And those polls were totally inaccurate because of how much the press would attack him. And he managed a 42% at this point. Joe Biden has had the media on his side. You can't get a scandal exposed. And then suddenly, they're against him now, and he's at a 41%. What is going on here? And like I said at the start, you're seeing more of Barack Obama. Is he pulling the plug on this administration? Why is the media turning on Joe Biden? And like they said there, Donald Trump has better approval ratings at this point than Joe Biden. That is the same press that, following the inauguration, could not stop talking about how the adults were back in the room. There's going to be stability. Joe Biden is going to save America. This is from CBS. "Product shortages and soaring prices reveal fragility of U.S. supply chain. Grocery shoppers have likely noticed an empty shelf of late where household staples like baby formula or sunflower oil are normally on display. About 31% of grocery products consumers browsed were out of stock in the first week of April." They say grocery prices were up 9% in March from a year ago. This is Joe Biden's America. And of course, who do they blame? It's not as if, well, they want you to think that inflation just started in February when Putin invaded Ukraine, not that it started the day Joe Biden was elected. And notice again who Biden is blaming for inflation. Clip three.
"Putin's invasion of Ukraine has driven up gas prices and food prices all over the world. Ukraine and Russia are the one and two largest wheat producers in the world. We're number three. They're shut down. We saw that in yesterday's inflation data. What people don't know is that 70% of the increase in inflation was a consequence of Putin's price hike because of the impact on oil prices. 70%.
Putin's price hike. They keep saying that over and over again. And now inflation suddenly appears because of Putin's invasion of Ukraine. And they love having this boogeyman to blame for everything. And that, I'm not saying that that hasn't affected the economy. It definitely has. But you look at where that inflation number, and the charts are all over the internet. I mean, look at that spike when Joe Biden was elected, quote unquote. Wall Street Journal says this isn't Putin's inflation. White House aides were out in force on Monday warning that Tuesday's inflation report would be ugly and blaming it on Vladimir Putin. No doubt that beats blaming your own policies, but inflation didn't wait to appear until the Ukraine invasion, and by now it will be hard to reduce. See, this administration, they love a crisis. They love how they can, or that they can blame all of their failings on this crisis or that crisis. They're not going to let that go to waste. They don't want to see it end anytime soon because it's so convenient. You can blame all of your failings on that event. And like I was saying, Joe Biden he took the Oval Office, he took the White House, and the adults were back in the room. They were going to solve this crisis. Well, here's a clip from one of the adults that's back in the room. This is clip 4.
A lot of people go to the store, don't feel that their wages are going as far as they want them to. Then they get mad at the gas station. They're focusing a lot of that on the White House. And you've talked about pandemic. You've talked about supply chain and Ukraine. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But they're still putting that anger with the administration. Mm-hmm. What do you say to them?
Well, first of all, I acknowledge, one must acknowledge, that prices are going up and that people are working hard.
She's a little late to the party. I acknowledge, one must acknowledge that prices are going up. Thank you, Madam Vice President. She said later in that clip, what I can say is that people deserve to know that their president, that our administration is concerned enough to do something about it. So that is what we are doing. They are concerned. That's what they are doing. And she now acknowledges, she doesn't acknowledge that prices are going up. She acknowledges that other people must acknowledge that prices are going up. These are the adults, and it's easy to poke fun at Kamala Harris. She, unfortunately for her, doesn't have the political veneer that most politicians have where they can put it on and say nice-sounding words that don't mean anything. She actually just says things that don't mean anything, but in reality, that's the way most politicians think. She just, unfortunately, is not very good at being a politician. And people are losing their patience. It's hard to work in her office. She's had 11 or 12 staffers leave since she came in. Now even Jen Psaki, the former Obama holdover, she's moving over to MSNBC. People are frustrated with this administration. Another source of frustration is this extension of the mask mandate on airlines. The Biden administration announced that it will be extending the mask mandate on airlines for another 15 days. Why would they pick 15 days again? The optics were so great for that, right? 15 days to slow the spread. Going on day, it's got to be in the 600s or 700s now. Just give us another 15 days to slow the spread. This is Jen Psaki explaining why they chose to extend that mandate. Clip 5.
Can you help us understand some of the science behind this? Why 2 weeks?
Sure.
What difference can be made in such a short amount of time?
Sure. Well, this assessment was made. I know there was a statement that was put out by the CDC and certainly would point to that. But as they're continuing to monitor the spread of BA2, the BA2 subvariant, which now makes up more than 85% of U.S. cases, what they're looking at is that since early April, there's been an increase in the 7-day moving average of the cases in the United States. So what they're trying to do is give a little bit more time.
We need a little bit more time. We need a little bit more time. And that variant, where did that come from? What did she say? BA2 subvariant. They're getting more and more fun to say. We got to be careful of the BA2 subvariant now. We just need 15 more days. Meanwhile, Title 42 on the border, well, the COVID crisis is over down there, apparently, so you can get rid of Title 42. And they're planning that months in advance, by the way, as if they know how the COVID cases are going to be in 2 or 3 months. But for law-abiding Americans, you keep wearing that mask. We just need another 15 days. And when they revoked Title 42 or announced that they were going to, They said, well, that's based on science. And then when it comes to the mask mandate on the planes, well, we're just looking at the data. People are losing their patience. And you know they are when Joe Scarborough has had enough with this administration. This was what he posted on Twitter. He said, enough. Stop. Just stop. Two vaccines, a booster, and 2 years of increased immunity means it's time to move forward. Make this, talking about the mask mandate, voluntary now. And some expletives, stop the mandates in airports. Now, he's usually all in favor of these totalitarian crackdowns to save people's lives. We need more COVID laws. But even he has lost his patience. And if you ever watch his show, he loses his patience pretty much every episode. So it might not be this is a big deal. But they've lost Joe Scarborough. And then you get Tony Fauci, who disappeared for a few months during the scandal about all of his emails being released, and now he's back. Notice what he says in this 45-second whopper. This is clip six.
Well, China has a number of problems, two of which are that their complete lockdown, which was their approach, a strictest lockdown that you'd never be able to implement in the United States, although that prevents the spread of infection. And remember, early on, they were saying, and I think accurately, that they were doing better than almost anybody else. But lockdown has its consequences. You use lockdowns to get people vaccinated so that when you open up, you won't have a surge of infections because you're dealing with an immunologically naive population to the virus because they've not really been exposed because of the lockdown. The problem is that the vaccines that they've been using are not nearly as effective as the vaccines that are used in the United States, the UK, EU, and other places. So they don't have the degree of protection that's optimal. A
lot to unpack from that 45-second clip there. If Fauci really was concerned about about public health, he would just stop talking. What did he said, lockdowns prevent the spread of infection. No data. You can't really point to any country where that happened. He says, I think accurately that they, China, were doing better than almost anyone else, as if China's strict lockdown really worked. He loves that lockdown. Look at the clips in Shanghai where they have imprisoned their population. Then he says, you use lockdowns to get people vaccinated so that when you open up, you won't have a surge of infections. We locked down in March 2020. There was no vaccine. What was the end goal there? What was the point of that? They don't know. It's the biggest scam in American history. Then he says the Chinese vaccines are not nearly as effective as the vaccines used in the United States, UK, EU, and other places. We're on to the quadruple jab in the United States. And he says China's is even less effective. They must be on the 8th or 9th jab over there if it's less effective than ours. Bragging about how effective the vaccine has been, and then at the same time warning about we need mask mandates because there are more cases again. It is crazy what is happening in the United States. I wanted to mention about CNN and this, again, talking about the rising tide of conservatism in the United States or backing Donald Trump and going against the mainstream press. CNN, they spent nearly $300 million preparing this new subscription platform called CNN Plus, and it has just fallen flat. I think they launched it 2 weeks ago. They have 10,000 daily users, which I think the Trumpet website has well over that as far as visitors per day, and then our email goes out to, I think, upwards of 20,000. So we're on the level of CNN Plus, and we have not spent $300 million to do that. And this article just talks about how, I'll just read this. This is from CNBC. They say, the paltry audience cast doubt on the future of the application following the recently completed combination of Discovery and Warner Media. They needed to try to get 2 million subscribers a year to be successful, and they aren't close to that. So CNN is free on cable. It's free in the airports. You can watch it all you want at the airport. Now they want to start charging people $6 a month to watch, and no one is doing it. That's it's pretty revealing when you turn over to those subscription models to see how popular you actually are. They're already talking about having to cut some of their talent. Chris Wallace, he fled Fox News, the most popular news network in the United States, to go work for CNN Plus, and rumors are that he's just frustrated every day with staff. Nothing is going their way. So CNN is free. They thought they could get people to pay to watch it, and they are learning that people do not want to pay for fake news. The Republican National Committee, they pulled out or announced that they are no longer participating in the debate commission. If you've watched any presidential debate over the last two decades, you know that the moderator generally comes from CNN, MSNBC, always biased towards the left. And for whatever reason, the Republican National Committee would always participate in this. And you never get, I think Chris Wallace did it, but he doesn't count. You'd never get an unbiased commentator or moderator. So we'll see how that affects the debates in 2024. Speaking of CNN, I wanted to read a little bit more about that New York City subway shooter, Frank James. He was a very big fan of CNN. This is from the New York Post. Frank James was a fan of CNN, and many of his videos, he appeared in front of a large TV tuned to the left-wing cable channel. His grievances against Whitey could be ripped from the teleprompters of any of the race-baiting hosts of CNN and MSNBC. The only difference between the dehumanizing racial hatred he spews and the commentary by Joy Reid when she sneers at white tears and argues that Americans only care about the war in Ukraine because the victims are white and largely Christian is that James advocates violence. "I'm wanting to kill everything in sight," he says in one video. Now, who radicalized Frank James? What media is he consuming that radicalized him? Sounds like CNN. Sounds like Joy Reid. And we're learning more details about his history. Another career criminal. He's been arrested several times in multiple states. Should never have been allowed to buy a gun. They have gun regulations against that, but he's a criminal, so he finds a way to do it. Should have been in jail for some of the things that he's done. And along those lines, this you talk about censorship, YouTube, Twitter, this guy is allowed to call for the murder of people on those platforms and is not censored. His videos date back many years, hundreds of hours of content. But if you challenge the 2020 election, they say, well, you're abetting an insurrection. We need to pull that down. If you question the origins of COVID, that gets yanked. But this man is out there, something that we should support censoring. They're called Good Samaritan rules of censorship. You can't get up there and actually ask for people to be murdered and killed. And you take all of that in the context of this ongoing battle about the ownership of Twitter. I won't get into a ton of details there, but look at the media and how upset they are that a billionaire wants to buy this social media platform. And it's so rich coming from these journalists, many of whom work for organizations owned by billionaires. The New York Times is owned by a billionaire. The Washington Post is owned by a billionaire. CNN, Fox News, all of these places owned by billionaires. And they're worried about how Elon Musk is going to lift some of the censorship regulations on Twitter. And they are losing their minds over this. So you see, you know, Frank James, he just gets to get on there and say whatever he wants. Elon Musk just says people should be allowed to question COVID. They should be allowed to question the narrative. And they are going crazy about him potentially owning that website. I had a few more stories here about the Biden's Justice Department, how they are going after a lot of these states that are implementing laws against abortion and transgender surgeries on minorities. And Jen Psaki said the other day that she's put those states on, they're on high alert they're put on notice, sorry. As if the DOJ, they need to make everything about race. That's the only way they can get involved. So they say that these are civil rights violations and they're going to go after these states. Never mind that states have the ability to make their own laws and rules. We're just seeing more and more about his Department of Justice becoming unhinged. Well, when we come back, I've got a few more stories here about rising crime in cities, the decline of California, and then we'll talk a little bit about the spring holy days in the next segment. We'll be right back.
The Trumpet Daily. A child is a miraculous blessing from God, an opportunity to build his family. In his word, God says to train them up in the way that they should go, so that when they are old, they will not depart from it. But how should you train up your child? Most parents do not know. Most parenting books offer only limited help because their authors do not understand the purpose and potential of your child's mind. As a result, millions of children grow up to be hopeless without any direction in life. Many come from broken homes. Many do not have a home. This is why so many young people become delinquent, rebellious, and unsuccessful as teenagers and adults. But you can rear successful, jubilant children and avoid the heartache of an unhappy and miserable home. God has outlined how to rear obedient children in His Word. Our free book, Child Rearing with Vision, will show you how to raise children that follow after God's abundant way of life. It will help you build a strong, united family. It will help you bring God's love into your child rearing. And it will guide you through the momentous journey of preparing your child to serve God the Father forever. Request your free copy of Child Rearing with Vision at our website, thetrumpet.com. The Trumpet Daily.
Welcome back to The Trumpet Daily. In the second half here, I've got quite a few stories about a theme that I wanted to highlight about emotional instability, some of the unhinged actions that you're seeing in American cities. I wanted to begin, though, by quoting a few verses that talk about the God of this world and how you need this context to understand the insanity that you're seeing play out in the streets of America's cities. 2 Corinthians 4 and verse 4 says, "In whom the God of this world has blinded the minds of them which believe not." The God of this world, Satan, is the God of this world. Isaiah 3 and verse 12 says that, "As for my people, children are their oppressors, and women rule over them." We are seeing childish leadership. We're seeing, and in many cases, literally children, just spoiled children behaving, or adults even behaving like spoiled children. You can't tell them no. They have to get their way. And why is that? Well, Satan's broadcast, Ephesians 2 and verse 2, "Wherein in time past you walked according to the course of this world, according to the prince of the power of the air, the spirit that now works in the children of disobedience." This is the devil's world, and his broadcast is intense. 2 Timothy 3, verse 1 and 13. "This know also, that in the last days, the days that we're living in right now, perilous times shall come, but evil men and seducers shall wax worse and worse, deceiving and being deceived." We're seeing these problems intensify, and it's hard to watch, but when you understand Bible prophecy, you know that all of this points to the imminent return of Jesus Christ. There is tremendous hope in that, but when you see these events, when you read about these events, know that it is all a sign of where we are in Bible prophecy. It's getting worse and worse. Revelation 12 and verse 9 and 12. "And the great dragon was cast out, that old serpent called the devil, and Satan, which deceives the whole world, he was cast out into the earth, and his angels were cast out with him. Woe to the inhabitants of the earth and of the sea, for the devil is come down unto you, having great wrath, because he knows that he has but a short time." He has but a short time, and you're seeing the intensity of that broadcast. You're seeing the intensity of these evils increase, waxing worse and worse. Children oppressing, childish leaders oppressing people. California has had a slew of problems over the past couple of months, well, decades, but it's getting even worse. this article by Joel Kotkin at Real Clear Investigations is titled California's Vanished Dream by the Numbers. He says California is descending into something resembling modern-day feudalism, with the poor and weak trapped by policies subsidized by taxes paid by the rich and powerful. He says the poor and near-poor constitute over one-third, well over 10 million of the state's residents, according to the Public Policy Institute of California. Now, this is the American dream. California is supposed to be the place to be, but it has the highest rate of poverty anywhere in the United States, but also the wealthiest people in the United States. It's the most progressive state, and it's not helping its people. And you're seeing crazier and crazier things come out of this state. I remember when I visited there 10 years ago, as soon as you get out of the airport, there's homeless people sleeping on the street, pushing their carts around. You go to the beach and there's homeless people all over the park sleeping, and it's gotten even worse. And now many of the gangs there are, it used to be gang violence, gangs against gangs. Well, it seems like they're allying with each other and they're coming after those rich, wealthy people in Los Angeles. This is from the LA Times just a couple days ago. 17 LA gangs have sent out crews to follow and rob the city's wealthiest. More than a dozen LA gangs are targeting some of the city's wealthiest residents in a new and aggressive manner. So what they do is they hang out near a jewelry store, they hang out near banks, or they hang out by these high-end stores, and they wait for customers to come out. One or two guys will follow them to their car, then they'll rob them at their car and drive away. And there's footage of these people stealing or robbing these people at gunpoint as they come out of the store. Some people try to fight back. There's one video of these thieves driving their car right into this person as they fled. And they're following people back to their homes as well. There's another video of this woman. She is pushing her stroller with, I think she has got two kids in it. She comes through. She opens the gate into her driveway. And these two thugs follow her in, steal her stuff, and leave. You can't go for a walk in these once ritzy neighborhoods. And the sad part is many of them get caught. But because of the radical prosecutors in these cities, they're released the next day. They consider these sorts of crimes just petty crimes. There's a video in San Francisco, I think of a Walgreens. Everything on the shelf is behind a plastic barrier. You have to call the clerk over to unlock it if you want any products because the theft is so bad in that city. The United States Postal Service announced that it's discontinuing service in one Los Angeles neighborhood because its postal workers keep getting assaulted. So now the people in these poorer neighborhoods can't even get their mail. Like I was saying, it's just getting worse and worse. People are out of control. The crime is out of control. This is from the New York Times. It's titled, Angry Drivers, Lots of Guns, An Explosion in Road Rage Shootings. And I'll just read a few examples from this article about how a tiny little incident on the road, maybe someone merged too quickly and cut you off. People are getting, they're so emotionally unstable that that little offense is triggering them to, well, pull the trigger on a gun. They're actually firing shots into these cars that commit these tiny little, it's not a traffic violation. It's just, well, he pulled in a little too close to me. I got upset. These road rage incidents, people are dying because they have no emotional control and they're just firing shots into these cars. This talks about an incident in Houston where a father and son were leaving a baseball game and he let in some cars before him and then he started to go. But the guy right behind him was upset that he didn't get to go, so he got slightly cut off. And when they got on the highway, that man had followed him and started shooting into his truck and killed his son. Now, that man was eventually found. He was arrested. He's a murderer. But that prosecutor in Houston, that judge, is actually considering releasing that man so that he can go back to work. That's the sort of justice that we have in the United States right now. The Times writes, the random pointlessness of the killing shocked Houston. Then they go on to list all of these other cities where similar things are happening. They write, these eruptions of sudden violence, a man in Tulsa, Oklahoma, firing repeatedly after an argument at a red light, a Georgia driver shot while on a family road trip, are not unique to any part of America among a population that is increasingly on edge and carrying guns. And now police departments are just starting to track these sort of crimes. Dallas says, or the Dallas Police Department says in 2021, 45 people were wounded and 11 were killed in road rage shooting incidents. In Austin, Texas, they had 160 episodes of drivers pointing or firing a gun at people. They say the prevalence of such violence, not just in Texas but around the country, suggests a cultural commonality, an extreme example of deteriorating behavior that has also flared on airplanes and in stores. Last month, a woman driving with her dog shot and wounded another motorist in Oklahoma City. In Miami, a man fired 11 shots from his car on Interstate 95 in what he has said was self-defense. A Los Angeles couple is set to stand trial for firing into a car during morning rush hour last year, killing a six-year-old boy on his way to kindergarten. I haven't actually seen one of these things, but I've just noticed drivers are getting more and more erratic. You see it just going into Little Edmond, Oklahoma. I've never seen so many people just drive right through red lights or through stop signs. I mean, people are just becoming more frustrated, more angry. And the rules don't apply to them. It's every man for himself. And here, a little thing like a driver just merging over too closely. Well, if you do that on the road, you could risk having shots fired into your car. It's so important to pray for God's protection when there are so many unhinged people in this world. Following along these same lines, I've just got some articles here about teenage depression and young people that, again, emotional instability. This is from The Atlantic. It's titled, Why American Teens Are So Sad. The United States is experiencing an extreme teenage mental health crisis. From 2009 to 2021, the share of American high school students who said they feel persistent feelings of sadness or hopelessness rose from 26% to 44%. They talk about the rise in attempted suicides among teenagers. Many of them living in homes where either it's the one extreme where the parents let the societal pressures push on their children without any rules or regulations, just open access to social media. But then this article, I thought it did have a few good points. This isn't the cause for all of these issues, but the author made a few good points about why children might be having some of these problems. He says, first, children are growing up slower than they used to. Today's children are less likely to drive, get a summer job, or be asked to do chores. The problem isn't that kids are lazy or that scrubbing dishes magically dispels anxiety disorders. Rather, as this author writes, these activities provide children with two very important things, tolerating discomfort and having a sense of personal competence. So a lot of these kids, they grow up physically, but emotionally or when it comes to their mental maturity, they're not growing up at all. And you see that. You see the leadership behaving like children. This author says, researchers have noted a broad increase in an accommodative parenting style. If a girl is afraid of dogs, an accommodation would be keeping her away from every friend's house with a dog. Or if a boy won't eat vegetables, feeding him nothing but turkey loaf for 4 years. These behaviors, I don't need to read all that. They say part of growing up is learning how to release negative emotions in the face of inevitable stress. If kids never figure out how to do that, they're more likely to experience severe anxiety as teenagers. Now, there's a lot that goes into what is causing these problems. And like I read to you at the start about those verses and Satan's time being short and he's filled with wrath. But a lot of it as well, there's an article further down in here that talks about how many kids in the Generation Z, I think that's after 1997 to 2003 are growing up in single-parent households. They're lonelier. Their parents are away at work. They don't have as many rules. They don't have as many responsibilities. They're just left to themselves and their smartphones. The Atlantic says, the more overwhelming the world feels to parents, the more they may try to bubble wrap their kids with accommodations. Over time, this protective parenting style deprives children of the emotional resilience they need to handle the world's stresses. Outwardly, teens are growing up slower, but online, they're growing up faster. And it's not a coincidence when you look at the stats of people that identify as LGBTQIAXYZ, they keep extending that, that it's now at 20% of Generation Z say they identify as one of those letters. The generation before that, I can't remember the letters. I think that's the one that I'm in. It's 10%. Then the generation before that, it's 5%. And then it keeps going lower and lower. So these kids, it's societal pressures that are forcing them to think these crazy ways and get these radical things done to their bodies. And it's no wonder that there's more depression, that there's more attempted suicides. This is from the Epoch Times. American children losing motivation and creativity, teachers say. American children are less creative and less motivated than past generations. This teacher says they don't know how to think for themselves. She says that she sees a disconnected generation, kids that are terrible at problem solving, that don't even attempt to solve problems. This one teacher says, they do talk a lot about video games, but they never talk about going outside. They talk about staying up late. Their sleep rhythms are awful, this teacher says. I have one that was telling me last week or the week before that he doesn't go to bed until 3 in the morning. They might be a little more. And then she just says, well, that's dramatically affecting their schoolwork. So kids, again, that are never growing up, are not taught how to handle their emotions. And we see Satan, the devil, preying on that emotional instability. We see people opening fire at random on cars because they don't know how to handle a tiny little offense. And they're willing to risk murdering somebody, willing to risk going to jail. That is, if there's a prosecutor that's willing to put them in jail. This story sounds a bit comical. It's from Intellectual Takeout. Why can children no longer hold their pencils correctly? She says, amazingly, this is a growing reality in a number of countries. They quote The Guardian, children are not coming into school with the hand strength and dexterity they had 10 years ago. Children coming into school are being given a pencil, but are increasingly not able to hold it because they don't have the fundamental movement skills. To be able to grip a pencil and move it, you need strong control of the fine muscles in your fingers. Children need lots of opportunity to develop those skills. This instructor writes, it's easier to give a child an iPad than encouraging them to do muscle-building play, such as building blocks, cutting and sticking, or pulling toys and ropes. They just have the tablet. They don't even have the ability to move that pencil the way they want to because they're just used to only touching a screen. They're not getting outside. They're not facing difficulties. And again, it's leading to so much of the emotional instability that we see. And like I said, that sounds like a small issue. It sounds slightly comical, but it's just a symptom of so much more that's wrong in our society. This is another article from the New York Post. It's titled, Nomophobia Strikes Fear in the Hearts of the Phoneless. Again, another article that sounds a bit comical. They say, the number one unusual fear in New York City, according to a new report, is nomophobia. Hyper-connected New Yorkers see their phones as an extension of themselves, said Kent State University professor Andrew Lapp, who studies addictions to cell phones and social media. It makes sense that leaving your phone behind feels like leaving a part of yourself behind. And they write that like it's an unusual fear. It's actually very common, and I've seen it happen to people, where they lose their minds if they don't have that smartphone there to tell them what to do. And you see them at restaurants, they can't take their eyes off of it. Like he said, it's an extension of them, that tiny little screen, social media or whatever it is that they're doing on there, they can't go without that. And you take that away from a child and you take it away from an adult, they don't have the emotional maturity, the mental fortitude to deal with not having that screen in front of them. It's good to pull away from those things, to get away from this crazy world. I think the more and more you hear these stories, you see these stories about Los Angeles or these road rage incidents, you just don't even want to go out. Physically, you don't want to be a part of this world. And of course, we all live in this world. We have to work in it. We have to deal with these things. We have to pray for God's protection. But God commands in dozens of places throughout the Bible to come out of this world, to not take part in it, to be emotionally mature. We have to be really the opposite of this world. Tonight, we in God's church will be observing the night to be much observed. You can read about that in Exodus 12. Now, there's a lot of confusion in the world of religion on what days to keep and when, and I don't want to get into all the technical details about those dates, but if you are interested, you should request lesson 30 of the Bible correspondence course that talks about the days of unleavened bread, these days that we will be keeping over the next 7 days beginning tonight. And this night, the night to be much observed, I mean, that is mentioned word for word in the Bible, and you can see it in the New Testament that Christ and the apostles kept that evening as well. And I'd like to just briefly at the end of this show talk about the meaning of that night, the meaning of these days. And you get a lot more detail about this in Herbert Armstrong's booklet, Pagan Holidays or God's Holy Days, Which. Now, that booklet will explain what days to keep, when to keep them, why we observe them, why God's New Testament church observes them. Like I said, I'd like to touch on the meaning of this night. Now, this is the night that ancient Israel departed from Egypt, and the Bible teaches that Egypt was a type of sin. You can read that in Hebrews 11 and Revelation 8. This is from the correspondence course. It says, immediately following Passover is the Feast of Unleavened Bread. This second festival pictures our coming out of sin, just as the Israelites came out of Egypt, a symbol for sin during the 7 days of this feast. Simply stated, the Feast of Unleavened Bread pictures obedience to God, keeping His commandments. Now, this is a celebration. The Israelites left with a high hand. They wanted to get out of sin. They wanted to get out of Egypt. And we experience that same excitement all the time, coming out of sin, overcoming sin. And we have these days, this annual reminder that we have to come out of sin, come out of this world. And what a relief that is to come out from the bondage of evil, the bondage of Satan. Like I read in those verses earlier, he is the god of this world. Do you want to be free from those stresses and those anxieties? 1 Timothy says that God's Spirit gives you peace. It gives you power and a sound mind. You can be liberated from this world. Sin enslaves. And look at the damage that it causes. Look at this world. You can't salvage any bit of it. You have to come out of it. This is from the How to Be an Overcomer booklet. This is the section titled Offensive Warfare. Mr. Gerald Fleury says, look at the sickness in this world, in politics, in journalism, in entertainment. The content in movies and in print is getting sicker all the time, and all the while people justify it in an educated, scholarly way. I mean, you look at this issue of transgenderism, you could find dozens of doctors, scholars, professionals that will tell you, I just saw one of Biden's people say it again the other day, that hormone therapy is the standard of care for minority or minors that are struggling with gender dysphoria. Not counseling them, not wondering if maybe they have some emotional immaturity that needs to be addressed, not telling them, no, you're crazy, not working with them, hormone treatment, which sterilizes them, and you can't reverse that. They want to do that to 12-year-olds, to kids, that they get so offended about, but they will talk like scholars, and you can't disagree with them. That is what this world is. It wants sin to sound sophisticated, like there's something smart and intellectual about it. And you have to get to the basics. You have to get to the core of the law, and you have to just come out of that. You can't dabble with that stuff. Mr. Fleury says, somebody has to tell these people that they are sick. They think they're so educated when in fact they're into utter madness. Evil so satanic, it would have been hard for us to imagine a few years ago. I can't remember the date that he wrote this, but I think that booklet came out maybe in 2014 or 2015. The article in there, I think, is from even earlier than that. Transgenderism, that nonsense, that was not around. They were still talking about homosexual marriage at that point. And now look at how fast this world has changed. It has waxed worse and worse. Mr. Fleury says, and they are not going to like people who tell them what they really are. God's people are the only ones who are willing to fight for the full truth, who won't give a watered-down version of the truth. What kind of fighting spirit do you have, he asks. Are you fighting? Are you fighting to come out of this world? Do you walk out of it the way the Israelites walked out of Egypt? You look at these rhino Republicans, Republicans in name only. They're so intimidated by the press. They're so intimidated by Democrats. They just want to be loved. They just want to be liked. Adam Kinzinger, Mitt Romney, they just want to be popular. And they don't even realize, this is how shallow they are, that those Democrats will sell them out in a second. They're just using them because they're convenient for the moment. They don't fight for the truth. And even the conservatives that do talk about fighting, and there are a lot of them, they will stand up to this, but they have their own areas that they're very often, they're very wrong, and they in those areas can sound smart, but they're just always a few years behind the radical left. You look at that on issues like marijuana, on homosexual marriage, and give it a couple more years, or not even that, they'll be with the transgender crowd as well. You have to completely come out of this world, and how relieving that is. How liberating that is. And that's what this night is about. It's celebrating being liberated from sin, coming out of sin. And again, as Mr. Fleury states, or as this lesson states, eventually the whole world will have that same moment where they're liberated from the devil, where they come out of captivity. Now, it isn't easy to leave, as anyone trying to can explain. You know, it's not just a one-and-done thing. Just like Pharaoh came after the Israelites, they weren't done fighting. They had to keep fighting. The correspondence course says, but just as Pharaoh did not want the Israelites to escape his bondage, Satan does not want sinners to escape his bondage, which is slavery to sin. So keep fighting. Never give up. Keep leaving this world every single day. Be liberated from that captor. This is Satan's world. For more details on this topic, request our booklet, How to Be an Overcomer. You can call our phone number, 1-866-930-3024. Again, that's 1-866-930-3024. All of this literature is free. Request lesson 30 of the Bible Correspondence course and request Pagan Holidays or God's Holy Days, which. If you have any feedback for the show or if you even want to request that literature through email, you can send feedback or request to td@thetrumpet.com. Thank you very much for joining us, and we will see you next week.